नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय We read from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 13. The Descendants of Dhruva Maharaj, Text 26. Tam Utu Vishmita Tatra Yajamanam Ata Ritvija Avimsi Uyamanani Na Te Grananti Devata Tam uchur vismitas tatra yajamanam atartvija avimshi huyamanani nate grananti devata. Tam Unto King Anga, Uchu said, Vismita, in wonder, Tatra, there, Yajamanam, to the institutor of the sacrifice. Ata, then, Ritvija, the priests, Avimsi, offerings of clarified butter, Uyamanani, being offered, Na, not. They Grananti accept Devata the demigods. Translation: The priests engaged in the sacrifice then informed King Anga, O King, we are properly offering the clarified butter in the sacrifice. But despite all our efforts, the demigods do not accept it. There's no purport, so we'll proceed to text 27. Rajan Havim Siddhushtani Shadaya saditani te chandmasya jatayamani yojitani tritavritai. Please repeat. Rajan, O King, avimshi, sacrificial offerings, adushtani, not polluted. Shraddhaya, with great faith and care. Asaditani, collected. Che, your. J, Chandamsi. The mantras. Ayatayamani. Not deficient. Yojitani. Properly executed. Jutavratai. By qualified Brahmins. Translation. O King, we know that the paraphernalia to perform the sacrifice is well collected by you with great faith and care, and is not polluted. Our chanting of the Vedic hymns is also not deficient in any way, for all the Brahmins and priests here are expert and are executing the performances properly. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. It is the practice of the Brahmanas conversant with the science to pronounce a Vedic mantra in the right accent. The combination of the mantra and Sanskrit words must be chanted with the right pronunciation, otherwise it will not be successful. In this age, the Brahmanas are neither well-versed in the Sanskrit language nor very pure in practical life. But by chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, one can attain the highest benefit of such sacrificial performances. Even if the Hare Krishna mantra is not chanted properly, it still has so much potency that the chanter gains the effect. Translation again. O King, we know that the paraphernalia to perform the sacrifice is well collected by you with great faith and care, and is not polluted. Our chanting of the Vedic hymns is also not deficient in any way. For all the Brahmins and priests present here are expert and are executing the performances properly. So the story of King Anga is full of mysteries and apparent contradictions. And therefore, Vidura asked Maitreya to explain the history and unravel the mysteries. So now Maitreya begins to recount the history in detail. And from the very beginning, there's another mystery, another apparent contradiction. The sacrifice was performed for the sake of the demigods, but none of the demigods came to accept their portions of the sacrificial offering. So, how did it happen? And the king, as was the practice, was observing a vow of silence during the sacrifice. But the priests informed the king that although they were doing everything they were supposed to do, the demigods did not come. And here they mention in an indirect way, the qualifications of the persons involved in the sacrifice. First is the king who was meant to collect the sacrificial ingredients. So they say that he collected them with great faith and care. So there's no defect in the collection of the items to be offered. But one might collect the items properly, but then they might become contaminated. But the priest said no, the items were not polluted. So then one might question, well, there might be some defect in the Brahmins and priests. And they say no, the priests are all expert, they're qualified, and not only are they qualified, but they are doing their duties properly. So the chanting of mantras in Vedic sacrifices had to be done perfectly. The mantras had to be pronounced perfectly. And if there was even a slight discrepancy in the pronunciation, the whole sacrifice could be nullified, or the sacrifice could actually have the opposite effect of the intended result. There's a story in the Bhagavatam that just by mispronouncing one syllable, the whole meaning of the mantra changed, and the sacrifice produced the opposite result. And therefore there were referee Brahmins who would, like a referee in a football match, he would be on the sidelines and observe everything, and if someone made a mistake, he would blow the whistle, figuratively, and point out that you mispronounced this word or this syllable. And then they would have to recite the mantra again properly, because if even one syllable was mispronounced, even one vowel, the effects would be spoiled. But that was not the case in this sacrifice. And the mystery remained until finally the king, he wanted to know what offense he had committed that, in spite of everything being executed properly, still the demigods were not coming. Of course, I know the secret of this mystery, but I will not tell you. You will have to come back tomorrow and the next day as the mystery is gradually revealed. But the one important point for us is that we are unable to collect the ingredients for sacrifice in the present age. We don't have such resources, and we don't have such qualified Brahmins who could perform the sacrifice and pronounce the mantras properly. And therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given us the holy names of the Lord to chant as the Yuga Dharma. Vedic sacrifice was practiced in Treta Yuga, and deity worship was performed in Dwapara Yuga. And we're not even able to perform deity worship as we should. There was one incident at the Ardha Kumbha Mela in 1971. It was very cold, and of course we were living in tents. That's how people live at the Kumbha Mela. And it was so cold that most of the devotees didn't want to get out of their sleeping bags in the morning because it was so cold. There were a few staunch ones, Tamal Krishna Goswami and Hansaduta Prabhu. They would get up early every morning and they would walk from our camp to the Ganges, take a bath in the freezing cold water. But the rest of us, we sort of, you know, stayed in our sleeping bags as long as we could, waiting to gather the courage to get up. And Srila Prabhupada knew what was happening, and he considered it very important that the devotees rise early. This is like one of the basic principles of sadhana bhakti, to rise early in the morning before sunrise during the Brahma Muhurta period. Even my Ayurvedic physician, who's very qualified and who speaks on the authority of scripture, mainly the Charak Samhita, he also mentioned that the Charak Samhita says one should get up in the Brahma Muhurta, and that if one, which is in the mode of goodness, and that if one sleeps through the sunrise, he will be affected by the modes of passion and ignorance. So Srila Prabhupada, I mean, natural Mangal Arati is in the Brahma Muhurta period, Mangala. Prabhupada said if we attend Mangal Arati, the whole day will be auspicious, and if we don't, then we'll be inauspicious. But anyway, so at the Ardha Kumbha Mela, Prabhupada perceived that the devotees were sleeping late, and what happened after we would get up is we'd have to take bath from a pump, the type of pump that goes down, and that was cold water. But anyway, one morning, just to like encourage us, Srila Prabhupada came out of his tent. He would usually wait, because of his, that was his schedule. He would translate, get up like, whatever, midnight or 1 in the morning and translate and then take bath. But just to, like, help us, he came out at 4 in the morning and took bath, you know, just came out in his gumption, took cold bath. Otherwise the devotees would heat the water for him, just to set the example for us. So, of course, the news spread, so we all, like, jumped out of our sleeping bags and rushed out, saw Srila Prabhupada, and then we were, like, so humiliated, of course, we had to take our baths. So, and then we would, you know, go to the Pandal for Mangalarti. And even though Srila Prabhupada wouldn't take bath that early, he would, not quite sure the details of the schedule, but he would come to the Pandal. The Mangalarti would be later, I think, just before the class, or maybe the class would be earlier, but after the Mangalarti would be class. So the one morning, Nanda Kumar Prabhu, he was the main pujari, and it was like so cold that he had to wear gloves, because if he didn't wear gloves, his hands would become numb and he wouldn't be able to do anything with them. So he, and there was wind. Yeah, there were gusts of wind. And he was trying to light the, you know, incense, ghee lamp. And the wind kept blowing out the flame on the match. And it was a crisis. You know, he would try, you know, to shield the flame with his hand, but eventually, like, and then some other devotees came up, because Panda was a little raised, so they also came up and tried to help shield the flame from the wind. And in the midst of this unsuccessful effort, Srila Prabhupada spoke into the microphone, Harinama, 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 Kevalam, Kalo Nasteva, 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 Gatiranyata. So on one level I thought he was sort of being sarcastic, like, you know, you can't even worship, you can't even light the flame, you know. You can't worship the deity, all you can do is chant Hare Krishna. But then I also thought there was a deeper truth to it as well, that in Kali Yuga that really is all we can do. One year... Yes, one year at the Mayapur festival, there was a controversy between the sannyasis and the householders. The history was that the Radha Damodar party, led by Tamal Krishna Goswami, was visiting the temples, which were managed mainly by temple presidents who were householders, and by especially that combination of Tamal Krishna Goswami and Vishnu Jan Maharaj, like, and the whole party, the whole program of traveling and preaching was very attractive. So many of the brahmacharis were leaving the temples, and so the temples were having difficulty managing without the brahmacharis. So anyway, it became a bit of a controversy in Mayapur, and you know, what should be the role of the sannyasis, what should be the role of the brahmacharis, what should be the role of the grihasthas. And you know, Srila Prabhupada handled it very expertly and tactfully. He sort of resolved the controversy with one verse from Chaitanya Charitamrita. Kiva vipra kiva nyasi sudra kene nai. Like, it doesn't matter if you are a Brahmin or a sannyasi or a sudra. You know, ye Krishna tattva se guru hai. If someone knows the science of Krishna, can be a guru. In other words, it doesn't matter what your position is in Varnashram. What matters is your Krishna consciousness. But still, this there had been like so much quarreling and fighting and fault finding. So Srila Prabhupada commented that in Kali Yuga, no one can follow all the rules and regulations of the different varnas and ashrams properly. And he said, but, you know, if you criticize me and I criticize you, then our Krishna consciousness will be lost. So, you know, no one can follow properly. And we should not find fault. And he said, and therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given the holy name. So that is our position in Kali Yuga. We can't perform Vedic sacrifices. We can't do even deity worship properly. And we can't follow Varnashram Dharma correctly. So the only thing left is the holy name. That's all we have, and that's that. The chanting of the holy name is sufficient to produce the desired result of all the other practices. There's a verse that says, what could be achieved in Sattva Yuga by meditation, what could be achieved in Treta Yuga by sacrifice, and what could be achieved in Dwapara Yuga by worshipping the Lord in the temple, can be achieved in Kali Yuga by chanting the holy names. So it is so easy. Srila Prabhupada says, even if we don't chant properly, the process is so potent that we get the effect. By properly, I believe, Srila Prabhupada means in terms of, say, accidental mispronunciation. Because Krishna is Bhavagrahi Janardana, he accepts the mood of devotion. And Srila Prabhupada commented in New Vrindavan that when the devotees were singing the Guruvastakam, they were saying Bande Gaurasri Charanaravinda, something. Instead of Guru, which, you know, means spiritual master, what they were pronouncing came out as cow. They're worshipping. That's also not bad to worship the cow. But it came out, you know, we offer our respects under the lotus feet of our cow. But Srila Prabhupada said, you know, Krishna bhava grahi janardana, he accepts the mood. So even though one has mispronounced the word, still one gets the benefit. So if we don't chant properly, we still get benefit. And in the beginning of the movement, there wasn't, like, no one really taught us how to chant. Of course, we would learn the 10 offenses. That's something else. You have to avoid the offenses. But it was really a while before devotees came to appreciate the science of chanting, the art of chanting, that you actually have to hear, you have to pay attention, you have to try to fix the mind on the sound of the mantra, and, you know, sit properly and pronounce the mantra correctly, the words to the mantra correctly, and try to hear every name and you know, chant in a mood of prayer, to be engaged in service, all the things that are being discussed more frequently and more openly now. His Holiness Shivaram Swami and his Vyasa Puja offering to Srila Prabhupada glorified Srila Prabhupada as the deliverer of the holy name to the fallen souls in the Western countries. And he was making the point, actually he was speaking with His Holiness Bhakti Bringa Govinda Swami Maharaj, who is the devotee who carried this huge Govardhan Shila here to Houston. So they were talking that although, you know, we've had many over the years, we've had different plans for the Krishna consciousness movement and different projects. A lot of the times things didn't turn out the way we thought they would or hoped they would. But one thing that never let us down was the holy name. The holy name always delivered the goods. And they said, like Srila Prabhupada and like Krishna, they never let us down. So Shivaram Swami said that if earlier devotees had appreciated the importance of chanting and had made more effort to chant attentively, many of the problems that took place in devotees' lives individually and in the movement generally, those problems could have been avoided. And he said, and perhaps even some of those defeats could have been turned into victories. So the chanting is so important. It's really the only thing we can do that's suitable for us in general. But we have to do it. That's also our misfortune. Even though, as Srila Prabhupada said, the process of chanting is simple, but the determination to chant is not so simple. So even though this is almost by process of elimination, this is the only thing we can do, the only thing that's suitable for us to do, even then, we're negligent. We don't chant our 16 rounds. Or we do, but, you know, in a little haphazard way. Of course, Kali Yuga is difficult, and people have to work to maintain their families, and there's so many complications. But part of it is just our own causeless reluctance. Because we have time for so many other things, like talking. What to speak of eating and sleeping? We find time to take prasad, we find time to sleep. But we find time to talk. We meet friends and talk. We pick up the telephone and talk. We type on the computer and talk. Now there's more. We have Facebook. We talk on Facebook. And now we have Twitters, tweets. We have so many ways to talk. And we find time to talk. But what about time to realize who we are? You know, realize our relationship with Krishna, and get out of the miserable material world. But that is also part of the problem, that although we suffer, we all suffer, no one is exempt, although we all suffer, we're not convinced that the problem is that we're in the material world. We think the problem is that we haven't figured out how to live in the material world happily. In one talk, Burijan Prabhu gave the example. I've also repeated it because it's a bit humorous. But there was a man. He got married, but it didn't work out with his wife, so he divorced her and remarried. Didn't work out with her, so he divorced her and married again. Didn't work out with the third one, so he divorced her, married a fourth one. Divorced the fourth one, married a fifth one. Didn't work out with her, married the sixth one. Didn't work out with her. So he thought maybe it'll work again. Work out, this time it'll work out with the fifth one. So he married the fifth one for a second time. She became the seventh one. That didn't work out. He married an eighth one. So Buridan Prabhu, of course there's more that could be said about this particular person. But the point that Buridan Prabhu was making is that he married the first one to be happy, didn't find happiness. Married the second one to be happy, didn't find happiness. Married the third, fourth, and so on, hoping to find happiness, but he didn't find happiness. But he kept trying in the same way, but he never found happiness. So the application to us is that we keep trying to be happy in the material world. You know, we try one thing, it doesn't work, we try the second thing, that doesn't work, we try the third, that doesn't work, we try the fourth, that doesn't work, we try the fifth, that doesn't work, we try the sixth, that doesn't work, we try the fifth again, to try to do it better. But this is not how to get happiness. This is not the place to be happy. And it's really only when we are convinced that we cannot be happy in the material world that we can fully take to Krishna consciousness. Because all this time we spend talking, what are we talking about? Well, or what are we trying to achieve by our talking? I mean, of course, Krishna Katha is the exception, but otherwise, we're trying to be happy. You know, we're trying to reduce our misery, you know, our distress, our anxiety, our fears. Or we're trying to get some positive feeling of happiness, some affection, some support, some encouragement. We're trying to be happy. So it's actually sort of a sign of progress when one understands clearly that one cannot be happy in the material world. No. And that requires a little soberness. Requires a little soberness. People are generally so intoxicated by the material energy that they can't see the plain truth. A devotee told me that he had read somewhere that people who are depressed actually see things more accurately than other people. But the problem is they're depressed. They see the reality of the world, the reality of other people. They see the reality, but they don't know about the positive alternative of Krishna consciousness. So they're depressed because they don't see any hope. Don't see any solution. But there's truth to what they see. And therefore Srila Prabhupada said that that we should be pessimistic about the material world, but we should be optimistic about the spiritual life. Then we can go on. If we're just pessimistic about the material world and don't see anything else, we'll be depressed. And if we're optimistic about the material world, we'll be depressed. because the optimism is not founded. It's illusion. It's illusion. His Holiness Bhakti Tirtha Swami had a disciple who she kept hearing that her Guru Maharaj wanted all of his lady disciples to get married, but she didn't feel that she was ready for marriage or inclined to marriage. But people kept saying, you know, Guru Maharaj wants all of his lady disciples to be married. So it sort of was bothering her, and she thought she would just ask him directly and hear from him directly. So she approached him and asked her question, and Bhakti Tirtha Swami replied, "If you remain single, you will suffer. And if you get married, you will suffer. The only question is whether you want to suffer alone or with someone else." So, you know, this is the plain truth about material life. There's no perfect place, there's no perfect situation, there's no perfect relationship in the material world. There just isn't. Anyway, recently one devotee had been offered an apartment as a gift, which was really a nice thing. So he wanted to consult me about which apartment in the condominium he should take. So one would have thought, wow, this is great, you know. He'll have a place, you know, for his old age. He'll have a base. This is really great. And I really thought, you know, Krishna, Kauntiya Pratijani, Hiname Bhakti Pranashit, or Yogakshema Bhajamyam, that Krishna's providing for his devotee. It's true. It's true. So we looked at the plans, and it was really great. But the back apartment, that was good because it had more windows. But the problem was it was near the railway tracks. And it's the sound of the trains. Okay, well, so we decided, all right, it's between the two, being trapped without fresh air and sunlight, or being trapped near the railway tracks, it's better to be trapped without so much sunlight and fresh air. So then the question was, should it be on the first floor or the second floor? Well, You know, initially it's, oh, that's great. Well, I could have either one. Well, okay. The second floor is good because you're a little aloof. But then in your old age, when it's hard to walk, you have to climb up a flight of stairs. So that's not so good. So all right, so take the first floor. But then you take the first floor, well, what's going to be going on over your head? You know, is there going to be some child, you know, riding around in his tricycle or, I don't know, something? Is there going to be noise over your head? Are they going to be stomping their feet? And then the other neighbors playing music. It's like this beautiful gift when you actually analyzed what was going to be going on there. It's like there were like so many possibilities for misery. Not just possibilities, almost eventualities. It's just a matter of degree. So this is whatever. This is what it means to be sober or depressed. So let's say sober. But within all of this, there's Krishna. And it's when you actually realize that wherever you turn, you're trapped. You know, no matter what solution you try to find to one problem, you get into another problem. When you actually realize that none of it's going to work. I mean, it'll work to a degree, but it's not really going to work. You're not really going to be happy, and it's not going to be an ideal situation. So then you think, well, is there an ideal situation anywhere? Yes, with Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan. Is there a perfect person that I can fully trust and love and be loved by? Yes, Krishna. So it's all there. So you think, well, you know, when you realize you're not going to get it here, and you want it, everyone wants it. Everyone wants to be in a perfect. Everyone wants to be happy. Everyone wants to love and be loved. And when you realize that that's those natural desires, intrinsic desires, are not going to be fulfilled here, but you still have those desires, then how will they be fulfilled? Well, then, Radha Neva Madha. Then you figure, well, why not just go for that? You know, why fool around trying to make things work that we know are not going to work ultimately? Why fool around? Why not just go for it? You know, go for the real thing that's really going to make me happy, that's and will be permanent. Why not just go for it? Then one can really take up the process very sincerely and genuinely, and one can give up the less worthy pursuits that take our time away from chanting the holy name, from reading the scriptures, from worshiping the deity, from associating with advanced devotees. Because there's time. And it's just a matter of where we place our priorities. There is time. and all the other things that we want, even in the material plane, when we really give ourselves to Krishna and Krishna consciousness, even those things become better. Or, well, if Krishna wants, they can become better. And one example I think of is a very nice couple, Karunamrita Prabhu and Arjuna Siddhi Mataji. She she was at the Japa weekend in Dallas once and then at the Japa retreat in Montgomery. Her life has been transformed. I mean, she was always a good devotee. But she said her life was transformed by the Japa retreat she had attended. And she felt that, she made more advancement in the, whatever it is now, 2 years since she took her first Japa retreat, than in like the 20 years leading up to it. And everyone experiences in the Japa retreats how close the devotees come to each other. And she's like a qualified, social worker, family therapist or counselor. And a major part of her recommendations, and she deals mainly with devotees now. Her finances are such that she can mainly just deal with devotees. Her advice relates to faith. A lot of the reason devotees suffer is because they lack faith. And on japa, as an activity that the husband and wife can do together. It's something they can support each other in, something they can talk about, something they can, share their successes and difficulties in, and it really, it just transforms people's relationships. And then she told a story in Montgomery that related to the previous Japa retreat in New Vrindavan. It was like that she had been planning to leave on the last day, but I really wanted to speak with her, and I asked, if she could stay on. So she explained that she was having house guests. If she left the last day, if she got there that night, she'd have a day to prepare, and then they were coming the next afternoon. So she's really had to get back. But the thing is, we really wanted to have some time together, so she decided, all right, I'll stay on. I'll just try to deal with it when I get back. So they stayed on, she and her husband, and we spoke very wonderful discussion, and they left the next morning early. And then I never, that was the end of it as far as I was concerned. But when we met at the retreat in Montgomery, she explained what had happened when she got back. She discovered that her her lawn, in her absence, her lawn had been cut. She walked into the house. She found the whole house had been completely cleaned. She opened the refrigerator. She found the refrigerator was completely stocked. It's like everything she would have done herself in that extra day was done by her neighbor who had the key to the house in her absence. And she said that neighbor had never done anything like that before. And she took it as a direct reciprocation from Krishna, you know, that she had, really given herself to her japa for those two retreats and then even stayed on to, you know, associate with devotees, and Krishna just did it through her neighbor. So when we do surrender to Krishna, Krishna reciprocates and takes care of us in ways that we could not even imagine. But it has to be genuine surrender. It can't be, oh, this is a good deal. Go to two japa retreats, associate with sadhus, and come home. My garden is manicured, my refrigerator is stocked, my house is clean from top to bottom. You can't do it with that motive. You have to do it with a sincere desire to surrender to Krishna and develop your relationship with him and serve him, serve the holy name, serve the other servants of the holy name. And even then, Krishna will help. Krishna will help. But the help should not be taken, oh, material life isn't so bad after all. But rather it should be, oh, you know, Krishna is so kind, even though I'm such a poor beginner in devotional service, even with me, you know, he's so kind, you know. What, you know, who could be a more merciful master than Krishna? I should serve him. Yeah, but experience Krishna's kindness in our lives here, and imagine that he'll, you know, that you can have a direct relationship with that person who is so kind and merciful and beautiful and blissful. So then, when we have that sense, akinchana gochara, that we have no possession, you know, and yeah, everything belongs to Krishna, but even if we try to possess something, we can't hold on to it. We really don't have anything that we can keep other than Krishna, our relationship with Krishna, our service to Krishna. And when we realize that's all we really have, and embrace it and cherish it, then we can have that resolute determination to chant. And from the chanting, we will get everything. Hare Krishna.